Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
97.1 FM Talk. On-demand audio. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Mark Reardon.
All the spending, all the regulating, turning off the oil and gas spigots, all these things, the chickens have come home to roost.
The Mark Reardon Show.
You can lead a man to the presidency, but you can't make him think.
Real begotten gains of Putin's kleptocracy.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Oh, I'm going to miss that here in a few weeks. Janie, you going to miss that too?
Oh, sure.
How are you?
I am peachy.
It is the final Reardon Roundtable of the year. Jane has very Christmas.
I got the Christmas
today.
Outfit on.
I like it.
I look like a little elf.
Yeah, kind of.
That's okay.
Is that green? Well, we're happy to have you here. Also on the panel, Jeff Rainford with Rainford and Associates with us this afternoon. Hi, Jeff.
Mark, great to be back. Great to see you again.
Truth be told, we had a little, we excluded Jane. This was a men's club only. Actually, it's not because Alexa was there. But Barklage and Rainford and I had lunch today with Lance Lacombe, actually. You weren't invited, Jane, on particular.
Apparently, I wasn't.
But David Barklage is here as well. David, how are you?
Great.
We didn't mean to exclude you, Jane.
That's it took me a long time to get ready.
It was non-roundtable related anyway, but I do have my little helper in here, Alexa Reardon, and she's going to do Sue Thomas's random fact of the day in the next hour. So do we have, Jane, let me start with you. We have breaking news here on the St. Louis County prosecutor. Is that what we're finding out? All right, so tell me what happened here.
I pulled the court order off of CaseNet, and Judge May has ruled that the state of Missouri is the appointing authority for the St. Louis County prosecuting attorney to replace Wesley Bell when he goes to Congress on January 3rd.
Okay, so the bottom line here is Wesley Bell's going to Congress. We need a new prosecutor. Mm-hmm. Sam Page decided to appoint his own St. Louis County prosecutor.
Correct.
Guy who was a federal prosecutor quit his job to take this job. Then the state came in and said, no, wait a second here. I think we have the responsibility to do this. You've admitted
Correct.
The last couple of weeks that the particulars on the law were a little gray, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was not a slam dunk.
Right.
It was by no means a frivolous lawsuit on either side, but a decision needed to be made. And, everyone needs to move on now.
All right, so is this a final? Is this final then?
Or no, it can
be appealable, right?
It's appealable. It's
appealable. But look, I think the big criticism is that Sam, in playing a game, appointed someone when I think the governor and Sam, at least the governor's office, was glad to wait and let the court act so it
Correct.
Didn't embarrass anybody and to get a fair determination of what the law is and
Absolutely.
Solve that gray area. And so in this case, you have Sam, not only the loser, but he put someone in the place the council voted down and in a premature fashion. So I think it's three strikes. He's out.
Yeah, it's a little weird that he had the guy doing transition, and one of the candidate that was chosen by the governor was in the office as this other person was doing the transition. So it's not really a way to run a railroad. It's that office is really struggling right now, and
let's get into the
new
bigger
leadership.
Story. Let's get into the bigger story. And you joined me 24 hours ago because I don't know that I really still even understand this one, how the clerk is being charged with a felony, and this goes to a grand jury a couple of days ago. So lay this out. We'll let the panel respond here this
the
afternoon.
The clerk of the St. Louis County Council.
Correct.
Correct.
Well, she's the clerk of the county, actually. And she, Sam Page and Wesley Bell got an indictment against her in the Hancock matter because she rejected the employment after the hullabaloo all came up. She in the computer, she's in the workflow because she's technically the HR person, basically, for all staff on the county council.
Dennis Hancock is my county councilman. Mm-hmm. He's newly elected to the council. What happens is he tries to hire his
stepdaughter
into a position. Then that's flagged.
Yes.
It's against state law. You can't hire relatives.
Right, exactly. It's
nepotism. But he never paid her. Because they called him on it before he had a chance to give her a paycheck.
Well, and I think that's why the prosecutor's office may be in Sam may be so frustrated because they may have they may have jumped the gun. And but anyway, all she did is when the employment came to her, she was the last person in the workflow for payroll and for HR. She pressed reject.
The clerk.
And the reason, yeah, the reason she pressed reject was one. The stepdaughter had already said, I don't want to be employed. I don't want to be paid. And then and the clerk was told it was unconstitutional. So she did the right thing rejecting
the facts, we don't know the facts yet. You may know. I don't know. But I think getting the facts obscures the real issue here. It's another time where Sam played a sophomoric move that sacrificed the leadership of the county, because clearly this is a very vindictive, very serious move against the council and staff. And to that regard, you know, he is freezing the county government at a time we need them to be working together. And he's going to have a more hostile council. To me, he is sacrificed for a short term political play. Basically his leadership.
The
for
running.
The next 2 years.
Yeah, the running of the county. I mean, it's
that's big.
Well, I mean,
whatever the technical issues are, his move.
Indicting a staff member on what planet?
Well Rayford, I want you to weigh in, but one thing I just want to make clear here is that this is what's even more unique about this. Not one member of the council approves of this move.
Correct.
Not
that's
even Lisa Clancy and the
Wackos.
Correct. I mean, he's so ham-handed with this, he even lost Lisa Clancy on it. What really bothers me on the whole thing, on the prosecutor, I actually am sympathetic that I do think that, you know, the St. Charles County county executive got to name the prosecutor. Probably ought to be the right thing that the county executive name him. But the person he named had, in testimony in front of the county council, said he had tried one case. And Melissa Price Smith, who got appointed by the governor, has extensive criminal
more
trial
experience.
Oh, yeah. And then what was even more troubling is Melissa Price Smith, who seems to be an honest person, said somebody on Sam's behalf called her twice asking for dirt on a county council.
Yeah, who hasn't even been seated yet.
We need to know who that is. And I,
well, I missed that one. What?
Oh, yeah. No. Yes. She got two phone calls. But so she had already expressed an interest in being prosecutor. And
she had worked with the council member, and they were asking her.
They hadn't worked together. That was the point. Her sister had worked with him. So she has a twin who is also a prosecutor. So somebody on behalf of Sam called Melissa and said, hey, we need you to get dirt on Mike Archer.
Not
and she's
once,
like,
but twice.
Yeah. She said, well, I didn't work with him. We didn't overlap. I don't have any information
during
on him.
During the interview process, and then she doesn't get picked, which again, maybe that's not, maybe
related,
it wasn't an issue,
but it
draws another conclusion. And we're talking about all this in about a 2 or 3 week period.
Right.
And I want to give kudos, Jane, to Ernie Trakas, who I think absolutely exposed Court and hit
Court Van Ostrand, who was appointed by Sam.
And did a great job in turning the council against him. And it's weird is that the council, who supports Sam's position that the county should pick the prosecutor,
right,
all opposed his nomination, and actually, I believe they all support her.
They voted him down.
It's David Barklage, GOP consultant. Jeff Rainford is here. Jane Duker. So let me. One thing that's confusing. I'm not confused by Sam pulling shenanigans, but what's Wesley's angle here? He's moving to Congress. Why in the world would he even be associated with this?
Oh, that's what I really don't get. So he made sure that this indictment that, you know, he overruled twice top lawyers in his office who said, you know, we don't do politics, we do law. And he overruled them and got grand jury time, hid it, tried to hide it from everybody, and then went on his Bahamian vacation. Like,
but does that make any sense? See, this
Sam
is where I feel like I'm missing something here.
That's all I can say.
By the way, I'm a supporter of Wesley. Supported him way 100% over Cori Bush, who I thought was one of the worst members of Congress of all time. And I support him, and I consider him to be a professional friend, and it's befuddling to me. I've stayed out of it. I haven't contacted him.
It's not to me because look, Kim Gardner was the greatest gift there ever was to Wesley Bell. Her incompetence was so legendary that no one has been paying attention to how poorly the prosecutor's office
Jane
has been
said
doing.
That. We have been saying that. Yeah,
I agree. But I'm just saying is that I think he is completely afraid that unless he supports Sam's position, Sam's nominee, etc., that his office is going to be exposed for what it is, weakening him in his first term in Congress and embarrassing him for the poor job he did.
And by the way, there's a lawsuit going to trial in January, a sexual discrimination case against him that's going to have a lot of dirty laundry, and it's set for trial at the end, January 27th. Sam has control over that litigation. So, I mean, there could be lots of things. But see, here's the thing. Everybody's like, well, why is he doing this? Because it doesn't make any sense. Just go to Congress. Why do you need to do this? Just
well, and by the way, it's not impossible that that will happen. I mean, aren't there sort of little signs that this thing is going to end up going away against, is it Valenti is her name, that this thing may not actually go forward,
well,
that
it's funny
somebody's
because,
getting some cold feet?
Well, they issued a true bill. That's what the grand jury does. They issue a true bill saying, you know, one felony and three misdemeanors. But the prosecutor's office has yet to file it with court, which means that's what has to happen in order for the charges to issue. So it's more like a recommendation. The prosecutor can still say no, and he has yet to file the charges. So he may chicken out.
So I want to.
Well, I hope he does.
I hope he does.
I want to give kudos to the Democrat Party in this region, because a few years ago it seemed that everybody that had style over substance won. Cori Bush, Tashara, Sam, Kim Gardner, and
Wesley.
Now it seems like one by one they're going down. One by one they're going down, and I have to believe that Tashara and Sam are next in line, because their records are now being exposed, because we've dealt with Kim, we've dealt with Corey's antics, and now we're focusing on
okay, so along those lines, and there's we're going to get into some of the national stuff with the continuing resolution, which they're still kind of deciding on here this afternoon, but let's kind of segue into one of Jane's favorite topics, that's Vervis Jones, and some of the things that are happening here. The story today, the headline in the Post is St. Louis developer says consultant, a friend of the mayor's dad, offered access to City Hall. Oh, shocker, right?
This girlfriend.
This one's hard to buy, right, isn't it?
Yeah, this is bad. I mean, it's really bad.
So
they
what's
did
the
some
story
great
here?
Reporting. It's, you know, there's this developer who wanted access to, you know, some of the
Vervis's girlfriend.
Money. And Vervis's girlfriend basically said, you need to hire me to, you know, improve your communication with, you know, SLDC and the mayor. And he even met with Vervis. That was part of the deal. Why is anyone meeting with Vervis Jones about any development project?
That's an excellent
like,
question.
There's just absolutely zero justification for that. And so, you know, and so now it's all exposed. So the developer finally said,
well,
you know
I don't
what?
Know that it's all exposed. I'm thinking this
oh,
is
there's
the tip
more.
Of the iceberg.
Oh, tip of the iceberg. But I meant this incident where he finally came out and said, I was basically, you know, shaken down. And then he fired her. He fired the girlfriend. And then she wrote nasty.
But the story this morning, look, he shared a recording, right?
Yes.
He shared a recording of a conversation in which Elliot.
He shared a recording of a message left by an FBI agent.
Yeah.
You're the mayor running for reelection and you're in a story within the same story, there's the three letters FBI.
Right.
It's no bueno.
Involuntarily FBI.
Right. She sold the progressive community. She was one of them when, in fact, all she is the same establishment politician, you know, putting juice in her pockets. And she attacked the business community, Bob Clark, the other day.
He did it again today.
That didn't have anything to do with anything. And she's been attacking the school system, her own people for being corrupt. I mean, it's all leading back to her.
Well, let's get to that. And this is another huge local story this week. And,
yes.
You know, kudos to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch for doing some pretty good reporting.
It.
But this credit card stuff and the details of what they were spending this money on just absolutely recklessly in many instances is rather shocking.
Criminal.
And it is criminal. And Steve Butts, state representative, he's on the roundtable on a regular basis. I think he was here last week, has sent letters to both Gabe Gore and the feds. Gabe Gore responded to his letter saying
good.
That they're certainly taking a look at what might be possible. Do you think there's crimes committed there?
You know, I'm going to leave it to the prosecutors to know, because if you are the superintendent and, you know, you follow all the procedures because there are none, you know.
Yeah, it might not be a violation.
How you've broken the law. But I will say this. First of all, I'm growing numb to all of the scandals that are coming out of the school district and out of City Hall. I mean, in the old days, one of these would be enough
to kill everything
up. And now they're coming out so often, I'm becoming numb to them. But the bigger story for the St. Louis Public Schools is how they survive. They're in a downward death spiral.
They shouldn't. That's the answer.
But I understand but there's nobody, not DESE, not the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education,
the
mayor.
It's not, the time charter schools, the state step up.
I understand. What
the
you,
problem's there. Everybody's known it. Everybody's known it for years, and it's time to change.
Well, I agree.
The state did
well,
have control.
First of all, there's
district.
No choice because this is the death spiral. This district will not survive. But nobody, not the business community, not the mayor, and not DESE, has stepped forward to start talking about
this is a crisis.
No, this is a crime against humanity. You want to say the crime?
We're past the crisis.
Crime against humanity against these children.
Yes,
that they care more about charging on freaking credit cards than they do educating the kids. And this has not changed. The last time they had a positive balance was when the state had control and left it for them, and they have misspent every opportunity. This isn't just credit card spending.
No,
this
it's
is
well
kids'
beyond that.
Future.
But, by the way, not only that,
bigger.
But
in juvenile crime is exploding.
It's also, though, you know, piggybacking on the desperation, the depths of what happened during the pandemic in these kids, the way they were hit. Hang in there. We're a Reardon Roundtable, the final Reardon Roundtable of 2024. We got much more to go. Friday afternoon, it's the last Reardon Roundtable of 2024. Jane Duker on the panel, our friend Jeff Rainford, GOP consultant David Barklage, as we toss around the topics of the week and kind of the topics of the year, because we're going to wrap up the year. The latest on the budget in Washington is we have no latest. They're still trying to figure this out with the continuing resolution going back and forth. Mike Johnson needing, I guess, some Democrat support on this. The numbers are very narrow. But, you know, Jane, as you've watched this unfold, I think we all have, there's some big questions as we enter 2025 as to whether there's going to be a new speaker in the House, I guess, because this is kind of devolved into the same thing that always happens.
Correct. And, you know, and I mean, my understanding is Trump is in there saying don't do this. So he's already undermining the speaker.
Well, he's not saying don't do this. No, I don't agree with that. I think that they're working in concert with the speaker and they're trying to get
something.
Right.
Well, didn't one of them say, oh, let's vote on each piece? And I was like, well, that's, you know, at least they understand log rolling. I mean, they want to, you know, I mean, that's an interesting concept.
Well, I think the concept is there with voting on these appropriations bills in the future individually. Right now, they're trying to not shut the government down, pass whatever might be considered a clean spending bill, one that has, you know, disaster relief and something along those lines.
But it has to happen.
This is one of those things for, you know, people vote for a certain thing. I get that there's a process. That's what I think a lot of the public just doesn't understand. It gets the sausage making. One of the things that John Kennedy from Louisiana said, I love him because he's a wordsmith. He goes, well, you know, Mike's got a lot of free-range chickens over there talking about the other members of the House. Isn't that great?
I like
true.
What he says is that you don't ever buy sushi from a convenience store. But, you know, look, a couple things. One, we're seeing Trump being proactive rather than reactive, which is good. For those of us that have been very concerned what a second Trump administration would look like, I think he's actually checking all the boxes. And to that regard, I can understand why he and his team are frustrated watching Washington throw everything in here and just pass it on. And if I were the administration coming in, I'd want a position to say, we need to take a stop and look at this. And to that regard, I actually think, as you said, it is constructive. There is a dialogue. And there are two different worlds. There's the old establishment versus the new. We're in transition. And let's see how this comes out. But I wouldn't condemn one side or the other yet. I think you have two different warm water and cold water meeting, and let's see what happens.
Yeah, I think this is first piece of evidence that governing is going to be harder for Donald Trump than he thought it would be when 37 members of his own party vote against him. And number two is, what happened to the Republicans being the party of fiscal restraint? I mean, Donald Trump wanted a 2-year suspension of the debt ceiling, which, if I have that right, means that for 2 years they could spend as much money as they wanted. So, you know, there's all sort of cross currents and surprises in this, but not what I would have expected. I would have expected right after the election, they all would have gotten into lockstep on something.
That's
and they
not a
didn't.
Bad talking point, but the reality is that cap is being used to dictate other kinds of politics. So it tactically is smart.
And
it's really not about fiscal restraint.
So here,
well, you're right.
What,
it's not
could
about
you imagine
restraint.
If a Democrat had proposed getting a 2-year? I mean, come on. You guys would be coming unwound if Biden had asked for a 2-year suspension
Jane,
of the
you
debt
you know
ceiling.
Very well, because you are someone who has many times done the right thing when it wasn't popular. To that regard, we got to get past when Republicans take a stand and take an issue like that. Let them go. The same thing with Democrats. When either party is willing to stand up for the right thing, stuff gets done.
Okay, but here's the reporting, okay, just now currently in the Washington Post. And it says, Johnson appears to have split the debt ceiling question from the struggle to keep the government open. And we're at, you know, what, less than 12 hours at this point, right? Instead of acting on it now, he proposed a handshake deal with fiscal hawks in his own party to try next year to slash mandatory spending programs such as Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Veterans Health, food stamps by at least $2.5 trillion while raising the debt cap by $1.5 trillion, according to people familiar with the deals. Well, I don't even know if I can get my hands around all of that, but obviously that's going to become very difficult with a president that said he's not going to touch Social Security or Medicare, right?
Well, you know, and
you have to touch those programs if you really want to reduce the spending. That's the challenge here.
Okay, but here's the thing. Reducing spending and getting rid of the debt are two different things. Cutting Medicare does not reduce the debt. I mean, I hate to say it, but I agree with Donald Trump on this.
It's off budget.
Medicare, those spending programs have nothing to do with the debt. So why are we, just cutting spending for the sake of cutting spending shouldn't be the discussion.
No, but what's going to be interesting here is Elon Musk does want to cut the deficit. Donald Trump, in his term, ran up $7 trillion in debt. He doesn't care about the deficit one way or the other. Watching the dynamics between those two guys, I'm going to get some popcorn and a soda to watch that.
Okay, but you guys love to play this little game with how much spending. A good portion of that was tax cuts for the American people, like putting more money into people's
pockets. So now deficits
pockets.
Don't matter?
No, well, no, I think deficits pressure on matter, spending. The whole point is Republicans cut taxes.
Where were the spending cuts? Where were the spending cuts?
Well, COVID. What did you want done in COVID?
I mean,
where did all that money go to?
Where were the spending cuts under Donald Trump? He ran up seven. Supposedly,
it all went to,
hold on.
To
supposedly,
Shishara.
with this tax bill, all the revenue was going to come in and pay for it. Didn't turn out to be that way. Responsible thing, if you're a Republican, which I am not, if you're a fiscal hawk, was to offset those with cuts.
Right.
He didn't.
I don't disagree with all that.
Right.
The excuse, I don't agree with the number because of the tax cut, but look, the excuse is because of the pandemic. The truth of the matter is, I have to agree with Rainford, that the Republicans have not been, all of a sudden, this is about fiscal responsibility. There's been consistent members of Congress with these issues, but not all members of Congress, right?
The entire country has gotten used to spending debt, and to that regard, there's going to have to be some real restraint. And I think Musk is looking at the big picture. I think it is a breath of fresh air when we have been, for about the last 10 years, running incredible deficits up. Both parties, everybody's been responsible for it. No one's wanted to take accounting for it. And Trump, by his appointment, has put his marker down of what he's planning to do.
But do you think that this is why I want to have some popcorn to watch it? Do you think Donald Trump is going to let Elon Musk eclipse him as far as anything is concerned?
Time will tell. Neither you or I know the answer to that, but
well,
I will
tell you
this.
He's never done it before.
Look, I am. He hasn't, but
I don't think Donald Trump has to allow it. I think he just sort of does it because
he's
Elon.
When Donald Trump says, let's have a two-year...
Donald Trump is not the old Donald Trump.
I agree with that, by the way. But when he says we're going to have a two-year suspension of the debt ceiling... That's not what Elon Musk said. Elon Musk said vote against that bill. He took the opposite position.
This is a very strong and independent cabinet, but Donald Trump is the guy that makes decisions today. No one doubts that he has the ability to fire people because he does it.
That's why
but look, this cabinet is unique. I don't know if everybody's noticed this, but he has brought in the group of the largest influencers in the world. Elon Musk, others have their own followings. They have power in themselves that people in their position never had. I think it's an interesting dynamic, and I think it's a new model of the future for Republicans. Forget mainstream media. I'm going to bring people that are influencers that have their own networks. I don't need the mainstream media. That is an interesting strategy. We'll see how it plays out, but it's
brilliant. It's no better than the progressives. Well, let's just experiment on the American people. I mean, I am so tired of everybody saying they have the silver bullet. You know what? You have to cut spending. Yeah, that's just reality.
But what people don't like this week, and this is where you guys are all insiders, so you know budgets, you know how this works, and it gets out of control. But what people don't like to see is we voted for fiscal responsibility. That was part of the election. It wasn't all of the election. It was big, right? Economics, people suffering, all of that. But you do have a situation in this where there's spending that just looks outrageous to people. You know, you see $600 million for this and, $1 billion for that. You don't know all the particulars. Certainly the lawmakers don't know all the particulars because it's a 1,500-page bill and they don't read it. So then somebody goes through it, like Vivek, who did, and says, look at all this crap that's not emergency spending. No one in this country would oppose North Carolina and Florida and hurricane victims from getting disaster relief. But
correct.
What they don't like to see is a bunch of the nonsense that is really defined more as pork.
Mark, how much have we seen in St. Louis is sitting on how many millions of dollars they can't even spend or give away? And what
hundreds
they have done
of millions.
Is an embarrassment. And that's in every city in the country almost.
So there's two different things here. There's the point Jane made, which is actually really getting rid of deficits is going to be super hard, painful, yes, and highly unpopular. That's one thing. Getting rid of waste, fraud, and mismanagement, everybody agrees, but there's not enough, not even close to enough waste, mismanagement, and fraud to get rid of the debt and the deficit. There will
I would agree with that.
I mean, David, you should know better.
We don't have the money. We can't spend it. Look, guys, at the time that both parties stand up and say debt's a problem, we're going to have to cut back, will be a great day for both. But so far, one party wants to take advantage of the other. Look at cities. Cities, their infrastructure funding is cut back. They've been building infrastructure for 50 years. They want to fund every park program, every cute little program they can, but they can't fund their infrastructure. Whether you're a city, whether you're a state, or you're the federal government, we are all way past our financial means, and there is a reckoning that is going to hit our children and grandchildren unless we act now, and unless both parties agree that we have
shocked and surprised if Donald Trump leads on what you just said, because he's never shown any indication in the past that he thinks that that's a thing.
And David, you know, we worked together when I was in the governor's office. Yep. And my guy did the right thing. He made the cuts.
He did.
And what happened to him?
Got voted out of office. I'm telling you, it's unpopular.
Because the Republicans said, you're a jerk, and give the money back to the kids. He withheld money for fiscal responsibility.
You know very well, especially you had allies.
He cut more than any governor.
You had allies in the Senate.
On the mic, Dave. Be careful with the mic there.
Yeah. No, I mean, we had some people, the fiscal hawks, but you know, we had people screaming at him during the State of the State saying, give the money back to the schools when he had withheld it to make sure the state could pay its bills by the end of the year. And that got shoved up his.
Well, the other thing that happens when
but Jane, that's myopic. You know very well, you had half that building that was in step with him trying to help him do that.
Do it. Yep.
And there was one or two personalities which I'm not going to name names. But you know, there's always going to be political opportunities.
Well, but yeah. Let's bring it where we are right now. One thing that I have to agree with, and this is, Barclay, I'll ask you this question. We get to 2 years from now, you know, right after the midterms, right? You think there will be significant deficit reduction from this administration?
Yes.
I hope so, because I do think fraud and abuse, everyone should agree on, and there's going to be things
that are going to fall out. I hope they audit the heck out of every dime
100%.
That was sent to these cities. They need to hire, I don't know, 500 auditors
that's a great
to come
question.
In. And audit every dime of that federal
there
money
is
that
no,
was spent.
There is no president in history that I can think of that has less to lose than Donald Trump in the next 4 years. He is, by every means, politically expendable. He doesn't have to worry about his popularity afterwards.
He's lame duck.
He has money. He can do anything. And here's the problem. The Democrats are going to focus all their resources and the media on him because they can't help themselves, while the rest of the party is going to grow and come along. I think the midterms are going to be at best even, I mean, for the Democrats, and most likely be good for the Republicans.
Oh my God.
And I think we're going to see Republicans for the next 8 to 12 years.
Even as bad as the Democrats are doing right now,
we're not going to start arguing about the midterms now, are we? I shouldn't have brought them up.
Yeah.
See, I shouldn't have brought that up.
You remind me if we're both on this show in 2 years. Hold me accountable.
But I think even as rough as the Democrats are, the Democrats need a large reckoning about how they're going to go forward.
Well, we were talking about this a little bit at lunch, Jeff, and you still are of the opinion, and I was reading a column by Rye Teixeira this morning. I think you even said you're reading a book. There are Democrats out there that have been preaching about this to their party for a while, and how, you know, they're off track with the American people. But I still see a lot of folks out there, including the leader in the House, Hakeem Jeffries, kind of in denial about a lot of these things.
Well, there's two different issues here. The Republicans are in charge, so if they blow it, all the Democrats have to do is stay out of the way for the midterms.
Right.
But when we do get to the presidential election, Democrats are going to have to get their act together, as Jane said. And to me, this is a way oversimplification, but we, as Democrats, decided to walk away from the working class, and mostly working class whites, but it turns out we also turned off working class African Americans and Hispanics.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Democratic Party first of all, I think the Republicans will blow it, not because of anything other than both parties have not demonstrated any ability to win the midterms. They will blow it if we just stay out of their way. But if we want to earn back the trust of the American people, we have to, again, at least care about the working class of all races. And that's where that's the biggest. And we made a bunch of other mistakes, including the cultural stuff.
What do we stand for?
But walking away economically or turning our backs economically in the middle class was the biggest of probably 10 catastrophic mistakes.
Right. I mean, focusing on 1/10 of 1% of the population at the expense of everyone else. Caring more about criminals than taxpayers.
Well, you guys are good at that, though.
There's underlying matrices in almost everything. You can look at what happened with the murder of the United Healthcare executive. And unlike the Unabomber, this guy has a fairly well-articulated, you know, manifesto that actually is resonating among people, not that it justifies what happened, but their frustration with healthcare and the denial process and everything else. The American people across the board are fed up with what institutions have been doing, with immigration, with debt spending, with the absolute incompetence. Government used to be able to deliver well. Now they don't even do that, and they're taking our money. To that regard, I don't know if Trump can do any harm considering what Biden did. I know that sounds overpartisan, but guys, immigration, what's happened there, Trump alone on that issue
will be able
to perform in a way that American people
adopt. First of all, by the way, dismantling the government will take skill and knowledge and experience, and I don't know that he has it. But take inflation, which was the two cornerstone issues were the border and inflation. Now he's talking about policies that are going to add to inflation, particularly when he's talking about tariffs. And so I think, you know, between the conflict between him and Musk over the size of the deficit, the conflicts between the old-fashioned Wall Street Republicans and him over tariffs.
Yeah,
I don't
Elon Musk versus, I'm going to point a secretary who's a transgendered, orange-haired person that doesn't show up.
Right.
My God, you can't
David,
lose on that.
David, what's going to happen in the midterms is people aren't going to look back at 4 years before and compare, just like they did in this election. They didn't remember what about Trump. They're going to look 2 years from now about whether Trump is controlling the border and whether he's got inflation under control. That's what they elected him to do.
Hang tight. We got one more segment of the Reardon Roundtable coming up.
Christmas, it's the best time of
Well, we have Jane going to hang out in the next hour. We'll have some fun stuff with Ethan doing Sue's News this afternoon and the one, the only, Alexa Reardon, Jane, doing the random fact of the day this afternoon. How about that? Looking forward to that here in just a little bit. David Barklage is on the panel as well. Also, Jeff Rainford. Jane, I was just given, I just handed you this statement from Wesley Bell. We started with the news that the governor and his side sort of won this argument over who the next prosecutor would be. So Wesley Bell issued a statement. Is there anything from that that you see that's interesting to relate to the audience?
I mean, it is kind of interesting. He said, well, you know, I always wanted somebody from my office to get the job. And while I agree with Dr. Page, the court is in fact, qualified for this job. I'm all good. And then he said, so, you know, quit telling everybody I'm colluding with him. Like, why would you say that?
Didn't he say it's appealing?
Contrary
he
to
wants
unfounded speculation about collusion between the county executive and myself on the appointment.
Why would he say this?
Hang on, Jeff. I don't have your mic on.
Democratic elected official?
It sounds like.
I didn't stop beating my wife. I mean, right. I stopped beating my
That's
wife.
That's today. Right. He doesn't have to worry about today. He has to worry about 2 years from now.
The collusion is about the indictment. So, I find that he doesn't refer to that. He doesn't refer to the indictment of the county clerk.
He's feeling the heat.
He's feeling the heat big time, and he stepped in where he shouldn't have. He should have just gone to D.C.
I don't get it. Right. Why not just start your term in Congress and
whatsoever.
Put this behind you? And people are hoping that you're going to be different than Cori Bush.
You know, sometimes politicians misread the winds, and he thought the wind was with Sam, and now it's becoming evident to him that the wind is not with Sam, and he's like, I'm getting away from that.
Why make a statement that points to the fact that you lost?
Because he's 2 years from an election.
Mm-hmm. He's going to be consistently.
He needs
an election cycle.
Because I'm telling you, Cori Bush is coming back after him in 2 years, and it's not it's unlikely that the national Jewish folks are going to put another $10 million in that race. So he needs to be running now.
So that is an expectation that she would just run again in a couple years.
Yeah.
Oh, Jane, you think she will?
Oh my
God!
Why? Of course. What's the downside?
Well, I would welcome her with open arms.
Absolutely.
Please,
David, come
back. She's the gift that keeps on
giving.
Three
people showed up to her.
I like her personally.
Three people. I do.
You like her personally?
I do.
Well, she does believe what comes out of her mouth, which not every politician does.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that what comes out of her mouth isn't nonsense.
Oh, there's another statement from our new congressman.
Oh,
yes, Wesley Bell's statement on public speculation. Oh. It is disappointing and inappropriate for public officials to make public comments on evidence or matters they have not seen. Every defendant has a right to their day in court, and anyone charged will have theirs.
So that's about the clerk?
It's got to be. What else
right,
is it?
Right.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Barklage, the folks at PolitiFact have picked their lie of the year. It's quite comical because the lie of the year is Donald Trump during the debate talking about eating the dogs and eating the cats. There actually is a little bit of a kernel of truth to that because they were eating the geese, certainly, in Springfield, Ohio. But don't you think there are several candidates that could have eclipsed that lie of the year, like the president's not dropping out, the president's fine, the president's not going to pardon Hunter Biden? There's a whole host of them that would appear in the power rankings a lot higher than that.
It is evidence that the press will not let it go. They will focus on the wrong things, helping Donald Trump's popularity and undermining their credibility. And look, our office was tracking that story. Everybody saw it that day. It was very likely to get into the debate. There were other stories about them killing a American bald eagle and being charged with it in Oklahoma and eating it. And the point is that it wasn't beyond credibility. And for them to impeach that shows they're biased. And again, the press every
Seriously?
Time miscalculated.
Seriously saying that, first of all, who said that this was the lie of the year?
PolitiFact. They're very biased.
I don't even know what that is.
Well, they're.
I don't even know what that is. But one, there's two separate things here. One is Donald Trump lies even when he doesn't have to lie, and he just is a liar. But number two is, and this is also true.
Jeff, he likes to weave. He doesn't lie.
No, he
lies.
Number two is the Democrats did cover up and did deny that Joe Biden was senile when he was. I was on this show saying everybody who has eyes and ears knows he's senile, and they were in denial until it was basically too late. Both of those are true.
Well, we found out that in pretty detailed reporting in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, and I don't know why nobody else is doing this reporting, but it was pretty serious.
Because everybody, the American people saw it, and everybody, it's
but Jeff, the
there's
story,
nobody who doesn't think he's senile.
At this point, but you have to remember, you had people in June saying, oh, this guy is fine.
I just
everything.
Said that. So and guess what? You know, because of that, we lost an election.
Right, but
if
there
they
was
had
a,
said 2 years ago when Jane and I were on the show saying, this guy's, he's done what he needs to do,
but,
get him out of the way and let's have
but
a process,
again, a failure
we might
of
not
the press
have lost.
To hold.
I agree. I think it is a big part of the
failure
of the
press
thing,
to hold either side accountable is a major problem. But here's the story that we're not talking about. Okay, we know the president's, you know, we know he's not going to show up. Where is the vice president? No one's even talking about her. Where has she been since
this
the election?
Great, you know, I will tell you,
I think it's a great question.
I'm shocked that you all are complaining about this because this is a, I wouldn't have done this if I were the president and the vice president, but they basically ceded the stage to Donald Trump. He gets a running start.
They have.
If I were you guys, I'd be delighted, not complaining.
Well, people like Dick Cheney and others, they stepped up. You know, if they thought the president was in trouble, what happened to her?
What by the way, what will happen to her?
Nothing.
I mean, she's not going to be a you know, governor of California, right?
Dick Cheney?
No. Not Dick Cheney. Kamala.
Oh, Kamala Harris.
Where does she go? What does she do?
She'll go
she's
teach.
Is she going to run again?
She'll go teach somewhere or go on Wall Street or, you know, make a lot of money.
Right. Jeff was distracted looking at the Trump-signed Bible and wanting to get his in line before the thousand.
Well, no, I want a signed one. You know.
I'll get you one. That'll be your Christmas present.
Wow.
All right. Well, we'll wrap it up here. We'll try to do it on a very positive note because it is the holidays. Does everyone have wonderful Christmas plans for next week? We're all ready for the holidays. I'm working on Monday and Tuesday, but we're not going to do anything real hardcore. It's going to be fun stuff and entertainment and music and things like that. So we're going to segue into the holidays. So this is it. This is wrapping up the political year of 2024. It's been a crazy one. We would all admit that. We have, David, a new administration in Jefferson City about to take over with Mike Kehoe, and I think some big hopes for him as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, look, very talented, a lot of hope. Mike is, you know, a retail guy. I think he cares about people. He cares about governing. But I think the bigger picture is I think it's time for the American people to take stock this holiday of what we do have, not what we don't, and to try to work together, see the bigger picture, and try to make the country a better place for everybody. And
this is where I agree with you that Trump has changed, because there are things that I've heard in answers to questions where he seems very focused on actually doing something and not just on himself, which he's pretty good at, and we know that. So I don't know. Maybe I'm
less
naive,
petty.
Jane. Well, yeah, I think he is a little less petty. I don't know if it was the bullet to the ear or what, but I do think it's something that has evolved.
Do any of us really want him to fail?
No.
And that's the score. All I'm just saying is that I have had the opportunity to get to know Jeff Rainford, who was the mad dog of City Hall, the partisan Democrat. I have learned a lot from him, Jane, when we worked together, getting stuff done. I'm telling you, there's a lot of good out there. It's sad those stories aren't told, but I believe in people. I believe in this country, and I believe that we've got a lot before us that we should be very
Listen, I was the guy for 2 years who said Donald Trump is not a threat to democracy, that's all of... And by the way, I do believe that there were Democrats who believed it. I don't believe he's a threat to democracy. I do think his next 4 years will likely be symbolic, but I think he will be kind of a run-of-the-mill, mediocre president, and everything will be just fine. The country will be fine.
We shall see. Rainford, Merry Christmas. Thank you for coming
in. Merry Christmas.
David Barklage, hey, did you pay for lunch today? Thanks for that, too. I appreciate it. Jane's going to hang out. We're coming back with more.
Get more at 971talk.com.